In the last 10 years, our field has gone from an unknown specialty to a household name. This brings unprecedented opportunities, but we need to rise up to meet them and give our patients the care that they deserve. In order to help others get better, we need to be better. This podcast will help you to become more confident with your patients, more successful in your practice or business, and a leader in pelvic health. And we're going to have some fun along the way. Join us as we rise together. We're Jesse and Nicole Cozine, founders of Pelvic Sanity Physical Therapy and the creators of the Pelvic PT Huddle. And this is Pelvic PT Rising.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Pelvic PT Rising podcast with Jesse and Nicole Cozine. Hey Nicole.
Hello.
Nicole, Pelvicon.
Pelvicon, holy crap, that was crazy.
Guys, if you haven't heard, the first 200 spots at Pelvicon sold out in less than 4 minutes, maybe about 2 minutes on
Black Friday. I mean, we don't even know. We can safely say less than five, but it was like a frenzy. And you guys are so awesome, and we really, really, really appreciate all of the excitement around the event. Wow, it was exhilarating for us, and then also very much like almost actually unbelievable. Jessica and I were on FaceTime. We have this picture of us where our mouths are like both really wide open, where we're just like, oh my gosh, I can't actually believe that that happened. I mean, we knew that there was a lot of interest, and to put it lightly, right? We knew that there was a ton of people on the wait list for a limited amount of spots. So we kind of knew, but it is different. And I don't know if you guys have been involved in any like course creation or even with sometimes with like our online courses and stuff. Like it is different to actually see it like be done, right? Like actually someone actually pushed purchase, and that we never ever want to take that for granted,
especially with a conference, right? Because it's one thing with an online course, you know, if you can't watch it this weekend, it's on replay, you can get to it when you need to. There's a whole lot of convenience factor. We really didn't know with a conference like this about people's schedules, about logistics, about
it's all airfare. The way it's almost like what, it's 10 months away still. Like, it's just difficult for me to plan even like 2 months in advance. And like for you guys to have had so much excitement and then actual, you know, pushing purchase on that for, you know, not an insignificant amount of money also. We just really appreciate that. We're really stoked about it. And the update on that is that we are exploring other ways for the conference to be more accessible to people. So
we're exploring ways to do that. So those of you guys who got in, congratulations. I know you were sitting by the computer and doing that. For those who weren't able to, you know, we wish that there were more spots available. Make sure that you guys are on the wait list for that. I will put a link to that in the show notes. If we are able to expand access in any way, we'll let you guys know first to give priority to those of you guys who were there and who were trying to register as well. So yeah, thanks. It's crazy how you guys as a community just showed up for this, and I'm already getting so excited. I can't believe it's this far away because
I know it's going to be like anticlimactic. Like, oh, now we have to wait 10 more months. But, you know, I think the other thing that Jessica and I and Jesse and Andrew all know without a doubt now is that Pelvicon is certainly here to stay. And so, you know, make sure you follow us at Pelvicon_official on Instagram for all of the updates and any information about the entire organization.
Yes. So now on to our topic of the day. It came from a question we've actually gotten a couple of times from different people. And if you guys do have these questions, guys, please do write in. Let us know. We love hearing what you guys want to hear about and being able to talk through those. I think some of our best episodes have come as the result of questions that you guys have either emailed in or DM'd in. But basically, this comes back to a version of the question of how do I treat a practitioner when they come to me as a patient? How is that the same or different? What do I do when I have another practitioner who steps into my office?
Yes, such a loaded question. We've narrowed it down to how many things, Jess? Three?
Three
main things.
The biggest thing in talking through this with Nicole, and you know, you've had quite a few physicians, chiropractors, other pelvic PTs come through. I feel like the thing that you were saying that really resonated with me is the whole reason they're in your office is because they have a problem, and you need to allow them to assume the patient role.
Yeah.
I thought that hit home really hard. Tell me what you mean by that. What does it mean to let them assume the patient role?
Well, I think that, you know, for us practitioners, when we're always on, right? We're always the one that are trying to figure something out. We're always the one that's providing support. We're always the one that's researching a topic. We're always one that's answering the emails and really caring for somebody. And when we have an issue ourselves, we stay in that practitioner role, I think, too long sometimes, where we're always looking at information or how to get help from a practitioner way. And what I think can really be helpful in a lot of ways is to actually allow that practitioner, if you're seeing them, to assume that patient role, meaning they can shut off their brain. Like, a lot of times when things are happening to you, you're almost too close. You almost know too much. It's like the curse of expertise in that situation where you are trying to think 5 million steps ahead and then you skip the most basic things. And as a practitioner helping another practitioner in that patient role, we have to not forget that they're not necessarily a practitioner at that point, that they are a patient first and a practitioner second. And if you really take that to heart, all of the conversations, the education, how you approach them, patient first, practitioner second, I think that will drive a lot of your language, the way that you interact with them a lot in a more meaningful way than if it's the other way around.
So how do you do that? Now, we're going to go through a couple of really practical ways here, but how do you allow them to assume the patient role? What do you do when you're explaining things to them for the first time? Like when they're like, hey, this, you pull out your pelvic model. This is the pelvic floor. Do you just skip it because they probably know it? What do you do in that moment?
I mean, the answer, it depends. It does depend. But in general, the one thing that I do when I'm treating a practitioner is that I assume that they know nothing. Because really, unless I'm treating a pelvic physical therapist with the same level of experience and expertise that I have, they don't know as much as you do about the pelvic floor. And so I would assume that they know almost nothing.
And in some cases, even worse than that, because they falsely assume that they know more than they do.
Right. So
it's not even a blank slate of a patient coming in who's never heard of the pelvic floor. It's somebody who might have been telling somebody, it might be an OB who's coming in who's been telling people that they just need a Kegel for the last 15 years.
Right. So we're undoing a lot of these unconscious biases. We're undoing a lot of these like identity things with, I'm smart, I'm a physician, how could this possibly be happening to me? So we have to understand that there's a lot of pride essentially wrapped up in being a practitioner, and it takes a lot for them to come in and ask for help, right? It takes a lot for us. It takes a lot for me to come in and ask somebody else for help with certain things, especially related to the pelvic floor. We can't forget that pelvic floor therapy is in and of itself a very intimate like thing that we, it's not something that you want to be. No one wants to be in a pelvic floor PT office, like frankly. No patient is like, they might have fun once they're there. They might enjoy coming to therapy, but no one's like, oh, please, I hope some point in my life I'm going to have a massive pelvic floor problem and have to go to pelvic PT. I hope that really happens. No one's saying that. And that goes for practitioners too. It's probably more of a nuisance to them, right? So what I usually do is some form of acknowledging that they're a practitioner, but still talking to them exactly like they're a patient. So I'll say something like, so I'm going to explain this to you like you were a patient, right? Meaning that I get to say every single thing as if they're a true quote unquote patient that knows nothing. But I also get to acknowledge like, hey, I know you're a practitioner. Just allow me to do this way for a second.
Yes. And I feel like the temptation is in a lot of these things, and one of the people who asked the question kind of phrased it this way, that they had it's almost difficult to say some of those things because you don't want to come off as condescending or like, I know more than you do. But at the end of the day, like,
but
you
do
know more than they do. Like, they're so in your office. And reiterating, I think that's a great part of allowing them to assume that patient role where they can hear it in a way that they've never heard it before. Because even if it is another pelvic PT who literally knows all of that stuff, they're still coming in and getting to hear it the way that you do it, the way that you're going to relate things. You're allowing them to kind of shut their brain off again. It's not, hey, the two of us are going to Sherlock Holmes this thing. It's more like, hey, I got you.
Yeah. And it might be something like, I want them to focus on feeling something in their body versus intellectually knowing that, you know, not engaging their diaphragm correctly because they know that they have a mid-thoracic, you know, spine problem. I don't want them to think about that. I want them to actually be able to be like, do you feel the pelvic floor lengthening when you're doing an inhalation? Or where do you feel that stuff, right? We need to allow them to be into the patient role, into the paying attention to your body role versus trying to figure it out with you. Now, there is a time and place for when you want to actually troubleshoot something and you can move into that and use bigger words and like anatomy and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, make sure that we're allowing them to be a patient.
And really the information, I know you guys always are thinking about, oh, we need to educate the information. Sometimes the information isn't enough. Like just because they know what to do, like perfect example is like eating well and losing weight, right? We all know how to lose pounds, like eat better and exercise more.
Eat, what is that one phrase? Eat less,
eat
more
food.
Plants. Yeah, eat food.
Eat mostly food, plants.
Mostly plants.
Not too much.
Not too much.
Like that's all you need. That's a nutrition course. You guys can pay me for my nutrition course. We stole that from Forks Over Knives, I think, is the guy who said that. But I mean, same thing with weight loss. It's like, yeah.
We all know what
to do. Eat less, exercise more. We all intellectually know that. And so even if the person coming into your office intellectually knows all of the things that you do, like there's a reason that pelvic PTs have pelvic floor dysfunction. Like you guys are, as a profession, it's not like you can't find a pelvic PT who has something wrong with their pelvic floor. Like
yeah.
There's something beyond just that knowledge there. And I think that's allowing them to slot back into that patient role.
Well, this goes for other areas of physical therapy too, right? Like I might know that my ankle is jamming and I need to mobilize my talus, but like, I can't do that. I can't do it. And is that really the thing? That's what it feels like to me. But is that really the driver behind all that stuff, right? You need someone else to like look at you. We can't look at ourselves like we look at our patients. And so same way from a practitioner standpoint, especially someone that's not in our discipline, which is what we're mostly doing, OBs, chiros, doulas, midwives, like all that kind of stuff, they know different facts about the area, and they don't usually know the musculoskeletal and neuromuscular basis for pelvic floor dysfunction. So we really need to own that, allow them to be a patient, acknowledge that they're still probably more with it, with the anatomy language and stuff like that than the average Joe, but we don't skip steps. Don't skip steps just because you have a highly educated person in the medical field. That doesn't mean that they know shit about their pelvic floor.
And that phrase is a get out of jail free card. I feel like I'm going to explain this to you like you were a patient.
Yeah, it's like the best thing. It's like everybody's guard goes down. She's like, okay, she gets it. Like she's only doing this because, right? But I'm really not. Ha ha, I got him.
And I love when smart people do, like that's a great phrase just in general. Like if you're talking to like an investment banker, like I'm going to talk to you like you don't know anything. But you know, between you and me, I know that you know a lot, but I'm going to explain it to you like you're a two-year-old. Like I had to ask our handyman the other day down at the clinic to explain like nuts and bolts to me like I was two. I was like, could you just repeat that one more time as if I was a two-year-old?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
This was like, watching this was so ridiculous, you guys. It was like the classic like male to male conversation about like, well, I'm pretending like I know what you're asking. I'm pretending like I know what more about your job than you. And then finally, Jesse was like, can you just explain it to me like I'm a two-year-old? And then the guy was like, it needs to go here to here to here.
This end goes in this way. Cool. Got it. Thank you. Let's move on. I don't know anything about that. Yeah. So using that language, I'm going to explain it to you like you were a patient. I feel like this is another thing that falls under that don't skip steps category, but don't shy away from the kind of questions, the personal questions you would ask on any other patient.
Yeah, this is something that I really, so one, a while ago, a few years ago, one of my staff PTs treated a OBGYN, or I forget what kind of a doctor, but whatever, somebody. And I was like, okay, cool. We were going over the case afterwards. And I was like, okay, well, what's her sexual pain status? Like, what's going on there? And, you know, does she have anxiety and stuff like that? And the person was like, oh, I didn't ask that. And I was like, why not? She's like, oh, well, I just didn't like want to. I didn't want to get into that. And I was like, why not? You know, like, I feel like sometimes there is this assumption that we don't want to expose someone's vulnerabilities when they're in that practitioner role, but it's our job to. We ask patients those types of questions that don't have that background. So we also need to ask sexual health questions, hygiene questions, anxiety and mental health questions and stuff like that, because I really think that, again, allowing them to be that patient, we cannot forget that there is our multifactorial influences to pelvic floor dysfunction. And we can't just skip that because it makes us feel uncomfortable that they happen to have a doctorate. And like, it's not like those things are mutually exclusive, right? You can't like, oh, if you are a doctor, you can't be anxious.
Right. Here's your diploma. Now you'll never have pain with sex again.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Right. I wish that's how it worked, but it doesn't. And in fact, people in the caregiving field, right, tend to have a lot more on their plate. And we tend to be more people-pleasing and want to and care about other people and take on other people's problems and anxieties and everything like that. And so that can lead them into more pelvic floor dysfunction. And we can't ignore that just because we're a little uncomfortable because they have like a similar degree that we do.
Right. Or even if it's somebody who's a referring physician to you, a colleague within your own hospital setting, whatever that is, right? Because that's just because you might actually see them at a get together at something. It's like,
and if you're still a patient. If you're sensing that they're feeling a little bit uncomfortable or holding back sharing, you could remind them too that everything you say in this room is confidential between you and I, but I really need to know this because it affects your pelvic floor in this way. And I really want to be thorough in my assessment and not skip any steps with you.
That goes back. Yeah. That skipping the steps it seems like the Achilles heel with this is like, it's tempting to just assume that you can jump forward because you have something of a shared knowledge base. Or
this also happens a ton when you have like personal trainers or Pilates instructors, right? We're like, oh yeah, well, I teach people how to engage their transverse abdominis all the time. It's like, right. But do you do it the way that I want you to do it? And I want you to think about it this different way. And it might be completely different language that you use. It might be completely different body awareness language that you use for those people. But we can't assume that we're both talking about the same thing in the same way, even with fitness instructors, right? Something like that. So or even just an athlete. Former Division I athlete that is clearly like looks very athletic but can't recruit their glutes to save their lives. Like, we can't assume that they have more knowledge than they do about their body.
Oh, even when you treated players in the NBA, like, it was shocking how little they knew, considering that they
have access to some of the best like medical teams. And I was like, can I watch you? I was like, can I watch you do a squat? Can you move for me? And I was like, oh my gosh, like that is a huge problem and it can be affecting this pelvic floor issue. And it's like, yeah, even somebody that's 6'8" and whatever still can have that pelvic floor problem.
Yes. So don't skip steps. Allow them to be the patient. Last thing is for those of you guys who are either you're owning your own business or actually working out like a trade with somebody else. We're going to talk about trades and discounts when it comes to working with another practitioner. Nicole, are we pro or con trades and discounts on this situation?
We are definitely con on this situation most of the time. Now, of course, there are some exceptions. But y'all, this is so frustrating to me sometimes when we assume that the services we're giving are equal just because someone else is doing them at a similar price point. It's not necessarily like that. If I treat a chiropractor, right now, do I need chiropractic services right now? Not necessarily. Could I benefit from them? Sure. Do I have time in my schedule to go? No. Do I care about it enough to make time in my schedule to go? Kind of not really right now. And so even though those services are halfway equitable, but it doesn't make sense for me to trade services right now with that person, period.
And it's pretty rare for two people to really need each other's services and care about it in the same level, because somebody is going to the other person and being like, hey, I have this big problem and can you help me? And really, I feel like if you're a business owner, or you know, sometimes this is even if you're a staff PT and you know, somebody's coming to you kind of outside of work or whatever that is, it's just really difficult for a trade situation to feel equitable. So first of all, you have to have equitable services, right? If it's you and a massage therapist and your rate is $175 an hour and their rate is $75 an hour, well, what, are they going to give you two massages for every visit with you? Like, are you really going to hold that line? Not usually, right? So now there's a huge disconnect there. Even if, like Nicole was saying, with a chiropractor, hey, maybe we are charging approximately the same amount, who's going to come in more? Who needs it more? Right? If, unless you guys both really, really need those services at the same time. And then the other thing that this fundamentally gets to is that you're not allowing that practitioner to be treated like a patient because it's a trade, because like, hey, you're going to need to come over to my place afterwards or even immediately after the session. Okay, cool. I'll change back and you change into a robe and now we'll switch. Like, well, you got to be a patient for all of 45 minutes and now you're right back into that practitioner role with that same person.
Yeah, it just doesn't usually work. Now, the one exception that we have made in the past for this, which you can consider, is if someone comes to you and they are have been someone on your list that you needed to like market to, that you really do want to connect with, then you could offer them a quote unquote free evaluation and then give your actual clinical recommendations and then say, and for future visits, it's this much money and go up to the front schedule with the front desk coordinator and all that. But in that situation too, make it extremely clear that this is a marketing thing as well. It's, I'm going to show you what a pelvic floor physical therapy evaluation looks like. I am going to take it seriously and treat it like a real evaluation. However, unlike a patient-practitioner relationship, you are going to leave with a marketing packet on how to screen your patients for pelvic floor dysfunction and all kinds of stuff. So it's very much like, yeah, sure, I can give you a free service and see what it feels like and what we do so that you can know what to expect when you're referring your patients, but then you're also going to, don't get it twisted, this is also marketing. So, and then once they, if they decide to come back at a frequency that you determine for them is appropriate, then they can go back and all of the assuming the patient role then clearly goes into effect as well.
Yeah, and usually this starts to come when you start to just not be really comfortable with where your pricing is. Honestly, this is a money mindset issue of like, hey, I feel bad charging a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, a referring source of mine, whatever my services are actually worth. And so there's a lot of introspective work that's needed there if you're really feeling a little bit embarrassed to tell somebody like, hey, cool, I'd love to come in. Initial evaluation will be $225 here at Pelvic Sanity. Follow-up visits will be $185 and all that's covered under your out-of-network physical therapy benefits. Boom, like that's your spiel. And if you're not feeling comfortable saying that to a colleague or somebody else who has a professional degree, a little bit of take a look inside time and think, why is that? And then if you guys do want to end up trading, and sometimes it feels a little bit silly, but if you are trading with somebody, then have them pay for your services and you pay for their services.
Yeah, I mean, I do that with a lot of practitioners. I see an acupuncturist, if she came to me, like I just pay her. If she comes to me, she pays me. A chiropractor, I pay her. If she comes to me, she pays me. Like,
which
there's just
sense,
no problem.
Because you might go to your acupuncturist four times in a month and she might want to come in once a month.
Yeah, it's just the whole thing.
It just makes
thing.
It so much cleaner. And if everybody is just upfront and clear with your communication there.
Yeah, so this is not, you guys, tell me how many of you guys have done this. I know you have. That where you're just like, someone reaches out, they're a practitioner, they're like, oh, do you happen to have any room on your schedule? I'd love to get on your schedule, because inevitably they never call the front desk. They're always DMing you on Instagram or emailing you personally, right? And so you're like, yeah, go ahead and come in. I have this time. I'll take care of you. And then now it's like, well, they're kind of expecting to pay something. You haven't really said it. Now you're meeting with them. You do the evaluation. Now it's kind of weird. And no one says anything about anything. And it's just that awkwardness about it. So if that happens, then what you need to do is just clear up that all of that crap at the beginning. Just say it all at the beginning. Hey, I actually don't do trades, but here's what we can do for you. Blank. Insert appropriate thing for this practitioner. Most of the time for me, that is absolutely, I can see you, which I don't actually take very many new patients anymore, but I will make time on my schedule. However, the price is going to be $225 for the evaluation, $185 for the follow-up visits. And
you're going to schedule with the front desk like any other patient,
totally.
Right? You're going to get the entire, you really are getting the entire patient experience. And again, if you're working at a place where that makes you uncomfortable, the question would be why? Do you know that your front desk is a pain in the ass to deal with? Do you know that that thing's going to be frustrating? But that's really what we do. Like, hey, somebody wants to get in. Nicole just forwards that onto the front desk. Hey, Dr. So-and-so would love to get in on my schedule. I'm willing to open up some time before my first patient on Wednesday for him, see if it works. And then from then on out, they're treated exactly like another patient. They get the same insurance receipt. They get the same spiel.
They get the same, fill out the same paperwork, right? We are not doing the like, oh, no worries. You don't have to do that. I feel like sometimes we do that too, where it's like, oh, it's such a pain in the ass to fill out paperwork. It's like that intake paperwork is one of the most important things you can get for a patient. And if they're going to come in as a patient, then they're filling out the damn paperwork. I've even made people do that. Even when they are the ones that are like, oh, I didn't think I needed to fill that out. And I was like, actually, yeah, you did. And we're going to go over it together. So, I mean, either way, like, I don't care if you actually write it down or I write it down, but we're going over this paperwork.
So that is, I feel like, a pretty good summary of everything, right?
Yeah.
Where it's, you're basically allowing them to assume the patient role. And I feel like looking, if this is uncomfortable, I feel like that's a great reason to look inside and say, why? Let's go a level deeper. Why am I uncomfortable with this? Do I feel like I don't have enough experience or expertise to be working with this person? Are they more experienced in the field? Do I have a hierarchical thing in my head about physicians or chiropractors or something?
I will tell you guys, the more that I have treated like OBGYNs and urologists and family medicine practitioners that think they know, they do not know shit about shit about, number one, pelvic PT, but also just two, about their own bodies in the way that we can help them. And I really, really want you guys to remember that, that just because they have an MD, a DO, DC, any, you know, doctorate level, medical practitioner, nurse, RN, anything like that, midwife, like they don't know what we know. And we're doing them a disservice if we are assuming that. One of the most good examples that I can give to you about this is that I treated an OBGYN who had vulvodynia, and she had so many like negative beliefs about her body. She had so many just false assumptions about pelvic PT, about the pelvic floor itself. She, when we were done after the first couple of visits, she actually started crying in my office because she was like, I feel like I've done so many of my patients a disservice because I've learned so much here in the three visits that we've seen each other that I've missed in my practice, and I don't know what to do about that. And it just goes to show that even somebody with their, as good of a doctor as she was missing a lot of pelvic floor related things in her practice, and she learned a ton about her body, and we were able to treat her and then forever change the way that she was treating her patients. So just remember that we all have our own areas of expertise, and just because we're treating practitioners doesn't mean they know what we know.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys for asking the question that led to this conversation. I love when we get those from you guys. If there's anything else that you want to know, a sticky situation you found yourself in, advice, thoughts, questions, all of that stuff, please, guys, reach out to us. Shoot Nicole an email, shoot her a DM. We want to keep this conversation going.
And let's continue to rise.